Accession number 26550, Real One.
Mr. William McAvoy at Real One. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. McAvoy?
The 30th of May, 1925, in Birkenhead.
And could you tell us a bit about your family and their background, what kind of parents were, you know, their lives?
I was the eldest of six. another brother. Not only one brother. Four sisters. And my mother was a big lady. A nice, quiet woman. Never struck us once. She always threatened, but never did. The old man was a boss in the flour mills. When I was 16, I joined him.
Now, hang on. And was it a comfortable upbringing? I mean, was there enough...
Oh, we never went short of anything. There was no riches, you know what I mean? Working class family, obviously. But we never starved, and they were good to us.
And whereabouts in Birkenhead were you? Were you in the sort of...
No, we lived... I was born in Birkenhead, but they moved into Seacombe. Now, I can give you about a dozen addresses where they moved.
Where's Seacombe? It's...
The bottom... You know where the ferry... Well, that's at Seacombe. All around that area.
And that's where you were brought up, then?
Mostly, yeah.
And what about your education? Tell us a bit about that.
Oh, council school. They threw me out at 14 because it was too flaming thick to learn anything else.
Had you done well in anything at school? Or were you
not really. I got a couple of prizes, but I can't even remember what they were for.
You didn't enjoy school, then?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I had a brilliant time. No, I never achieved anything. But as I say, I left at 14.
What were your favourite subjects and what's the sort of thing you liked?
I've done well at geography, if I remember rightly. And up till the last couple of years, I suppose I was down in the middle of the class. But in the last 12 months, I seemed to shine and I dropped up to about 6th or 7th. I loaned my school reports to a local school about 5 years ago on the promise they'd be returned, but they never were. So some kid somewhere is getting the benefit of what this old fool did those years ago.
And there was never any chance of you staying on. You were always going to leave at 14.
No. I don't think that ever came into the question.
Now, so did you start at the flour mills before the war started?
That no. I left school in 1939, August, and I started a butcher's lad in the co-op.
What was that? Tell us about that.
Oh, that was rough. And it was a very bad winter. Was it 40 or 41? I'm not sure about the year, but it was a very bad winter. And instead of bikes, they gave us a knock to get a sledge to take the meat out on. You know, in a pig basket. The round I'd done was all down New Brighton, Wellington Road, and it's all steep hills. And my father found me at 8 o'clock and clipped me over the ear off and I'm coming off my tape.
And so what exactly would you do? What was the typical
day
like?
Well, I used to do the whole bit, you know, scrub the blocks, clean the windows, clean the rails, then do the orders and go out and ask what the people want, then go back and get take it to them, you know. All for about 11 bob a week.
Did you enjoy it? Were you an apprentice, or were you just, working?
No, I was a kid working there. I was a delivery lad, really. if you stayed on after you were 16, you then became a kind of an apprenticeship, you know, in the trade. But it wasn't for me. And my old man worked in the flour mills and got me a job there at 16.
Well, that's well into it. Tell me about the outbreak of war. What do you remember of that, 3rd of September 1939?
My grandfather died. The same day, but I'm not sure about the hour. In Birkenhead. My uncle was given to a turn of phrase. Said, look at the bloody trouble the old bugger caused. All his life, and now look what he's left us. My uncle was the next thing I seen of him was it being fetched back from Dunkirk in a pair of overalls. He was in the TA. And funny enough, he was the, oh no, he wasn't. I had another uncle was also in the TA, but this side of the water in Wallasey. And he was only in 6 months and he threw him out. He'd had an outdoor job all his life. He was an echo man. He sold the papers, you know. And he had TB. And he was 80-something when he died. Just shows you, doesn't it?
Now, what did you think about the outbreak of war?
Well, I didn't think that much of it, really. It was just something that was happening somewhere else, you know. We were isolated here. You know what I mean? We're like a small town. It was in the papers, but the average working class didn't buy papers then, you know.
Now, what about things like air raid precautions?
Gas masks. I remember queuing
for gas masks. Tell me about the gas masks.
I remember queuing for gas masks with me mother and all my sisters in one of the local schools. I think it was Gorsdale Infant School, but I'm not sure about that. I thought you were going to say something.
I'm just wondering what you remembered. Sorry.
Very little. I remember the rationing me, you know, we'd working in a butchery shop. They started that early. One old dear was willing to pay me for every half pound the butchery could get it. She used to give me a tanner figure. You know, it doesn't sound much now, but it was a fortune to us kids.
How did the rationing work?
Well, very well for those that didn't have the money to chase the black market. But the black market really, you know, I had a mate who had a friend who had a cousin or something that lived in Wales where they were on a farm. Now, they always got extra stuff because of their connection to the family, you see. But we done very well out of it, really.
How?
We never got anything extra. But my mother was a very good cook, and she catered for us well. So on the rations you were allowed, which were very small, I must admit, she done very well out of them. Plus we had hens in the backyard.
Now this business about the butter and the sixpence, wasn't that part of the black market then?
It was, yeah.
So where did you get the butter from?
I worked for the co-op, which was one of those multiple stores, you know.
I thought you were worked for the butchers.
Ah, butchers, but it was butchers, bakers, you name it. The lot were all in the one building. So I would slip my mate a couple of bob and he would slip it to me and I would get the butter and sell it on. That was quite honestly before the actual rationing started. You know, things like butter, sugar. People were trying to stock up on this, you know, for in the eventuality of it all running out. But it didn't work that way.
And what about clothes rationing? Did that affect you much?
Not really. You know, those days, everybody who had a suit was lucky. And if your old man had a suit and he was short of money, he went in the pop shop.
Now, what about the air raids and the air raid precautions and the shelter?
Well, being under 16, I wasn't allowed to go out during an air raid. They had an Anderson shelter in the back.
Tell me about that. Who installed it? Was it you or the
corporation.
And what was it like?
Cold and wet. Damp. So what we'd done, we painted it. And as we painted it, we threw sawdust into the paint to soak up the dampness. And we had four bunk beds. So the four girls all had the bed. Well, us lads had to sit in the doorway. And my mother had a chair stuck in the back. While the old man was out fire watching.
And what was it like in there?
Dark and damp and miserable. But the old lady was a good singer. She'd always start singing, have those kids singing. And then suddenly she said, right, go to sleep. And you had to go to sleep. She was the boss. When I was 16, I was allowed to go out with the fire watchers. Now, at the time, they were dropping incendiary bombs. I don't know whether I should tell you this on tape or not, but I'm going to. And we went, they put you, each one of you, with an adult.
Now, this was for the ARP, was it?
Yeah, ARP. You wonder, helmets, you never seen anything like them. Didn't make bloody good plant pots. And this house up the road had a load of kids. And it got a firebomb through the roof, an incendiary. And it dropped into the bedroom. And this bloke I was with, I can't remember his name, Albert something. He run in up the stairs. And the idea was you put something over him to kill the oxygen to them. And the first thing he picked up was the pot under the bed. I can still smell that even today. Believe me, I can smell it. Yeah.
Did you have to deal with many incendiaries? I mean...
Well, again, I was 16 in, 41. So the rage here were actually dying off. They weren't as fierce. But we did go to the Christmas and the May Blitz, and I remember them were terrible.
Well, tell us about them. What were the...
Well, again, I was waiting for the co-op when he first started, and the first bombs was a place called... I used to know this by heart. There was a place called Stirling Street. Got the first one. The next, they were in a line. A building called Darley Dean, which was anti-aircraft batteries, billet. And I believe, I've never been sure, but I was told at times about 20 soldiers got killed. And the next one dropped. I'm not sure, but I think it was Braymore Avenue. They were all in a line when you work it out. You know, if you know the geography of the place. And I can't remember. There was probably four, but I can't remember the other one was. I remember Church Street in Wallasey. And that was white. The bottom of Edgemont Street was wiped off. There was a load of bombs. You know, because with being close to the docks, I think that was why we got more.
And what was it like? What would you see when you went there? Oh.
Desolate. You know, the damage was unbelievable. There was rows and rows of houses. And there was... In Church Street, they were all... before the war, it was a posh area. When I say posh, you know, people had a few of them. And all the bay windows have been blown off right up the road. And I can see them sitting, you know, on pavement. Remember a ship in the river. I don't actually remember seeing it sunk. Every kid in the area was wearing these Canadian lumber jackets. There must have been millions of them floating down the river. I never actually seen them, but... but I remember the kids wearing them, you know. My father wouldn't allow us to have stolen goods. Bigger than me.
Anything else about the raid?
Yeah, I remember that ammunition ship going up in Bootle. You could see that for miles. There was also one in the Bidston dock. And I damn if I can remember the name of it. I should be able to, but I don't. Nope.
What happened?
It was sunk in the dock. I can't remember that much about it, you know.
So you were carrying... how long did you carry on as a butcher's boy? That was till...
till 1941.
And then, what then?
2nd of June 1941. What a memory that lad's got. And then went into the flour mills.
And what were you doing in the flour mills?
Oh, you name it, I did it. They put you on the brush first, and then they put you on the truck, and your legs would run off you all day for 8 solid hours. 48 hours a week there, them days.
Did you prefer that to being a butcher's boy? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Why? What was good about it?
Well, as I put you, lad, you worked on your own. Whereas, this is where I met Kinnear, by the way. you had the companionship of kids of your own age. You know, it was like basically a step up from going to school. You know, you had the, you know, friends you knew, people you knew, lads who lived around the area. I should have had a whiskey instead of bloody water. Sorry about the swearing. Yeah. But you also worked in a gang, you know, of how many was in the gang? There was four in the gang. And when I started there, they just started putting young ladies into the same job that men were doing, you know. And they were also doing some of the heavy jobs, believe it or not. As Kinnear will probably have told you, he used to give you a wooden truck with steel wheels. They were lightweight. And they put two bags on it. Two bags, 280 pounds in each bag on the truck. Well, that's why I think we've lived so long. We didn't eat so well, but by God, we worked well. And I think the wages were about, I forget now, it's something like about £1, about 35 shilling, I think we got.
The Kinnear you mentioned is Les Kinnear, who course. We've also interviewed, so yep. They can look at that separately. But now, what was Les like in those days, Les Kinnear?
Still the same, exactly as you find him today. He hasn't changed one iota. He always stops. If you ask him a question, he stops and thinks. And 10 minutes later, he'll give you the answer. But you can always guarantee it's a sensible answer. Now, when we were 17, he said to me, I'm taking tomorrow off. And this is the bit you want that he hasn't told you. I said, what for? He said, I'm going to join the Navy. Now, prior to that, I'd had to go join in the Merchant Navy and the Marines. I had a cousin killed on Exeter. And I also had a cousin who served in Capital Ship. Come on. Can't think of the name of the bloody thing.
Doesn't matter.
I'll think about it. And them days, your father had to sign your papers if you were under a certain age, and he wouldn't do it. The arm would frighten the water, I think. And Les said he was going to join the Navy. I said, tell you what, I'll come with you. Of course, when I go in on the Wednesday, the old man said, where were you yesterday? You took the day off. I said, you're right. Said, where did you go? I said, I went and joined him. You're not joining no Navy, I'm not. I said, in 6 months' time, I'll have to register. And if you think I'm going in the army, you're not on. So that's how I came to join the Navy. But what Kinnear hasn't told you, and what I'm telling you, they turned him down. Do you know why? Because he'd altered his insurance card. His birthday wasn't till November the 15th, which he'd be working out, was last Saturday or Sunday. Right? And the chief, whatever he was, coxswain, in the depot said, you'll come back in 6 months' time, son, but don't change your birth certificate. I'm not sure whether you took your birth certificate or your insurance card them days. Now, fortnight after I joined up, who comes into the camp but Kinnear? So you got the whole story now.
I don't know whether he's told us that or not, but I mean, you know. So now, do you remember what happened when you volunteered? Did they test you?
Yeah, they give you a colour test. Tested your blood pressure, you know, all the bits and pieces. Those days, if you were warm, they took you.
And where was the recruiting office you went to?
Renshaw Street, Liverpool. Now, when I joined up...
What was the date you joined up?
The 28th of April, 1943.
So what happened after you joined up? Where were you sent?
To Raleigh. took us about 11 hours to get down there.
That's HMS Raleigh at Toll Point. Devonport.
Yep. Over to Tamar.
And what was the journey like down there?
Lousy.
Why?
Took us about 11 hours to get down there. I went down with a fella, a local lad, who knew Kinnear actually. A fella called Gordon Nash, who turned out to be Wallace's number one communist after the war. But a nice bloke.
And what happened when you got there?
Ah, got two dinners on one day. When we got there, this chief said to this lad, take them and feed them. So we went to the galley and got a dinner and a sweet, a cup of tea. And he said, right, lad, back to the hut. Well, by the time we got back there, they'd also filled the hut up. And this chief said, right, lads, fall in outside. So we fall in outside. And he said, you're going to be a dinner. And Gordon said to him, we've had our dinner. He said, you do as you're told. From now on, you keep your mouth shut and you will speak only when you're spoken to. You know the bit. Believe me, we had another dinner. And this fella's walking up and down, parade marshal type, you know, with a stick on his arm. And he's saying, you've got two extra there. And Gordon said to me, Billy, I said, what? He said, keep your mouth shut, your head down. Two dinners in one day. Always remember that.
And what about the sort of kitting out? You know, what do you remember?
That was so unbelievable. You went in and you get two of these, one of them, two of them, you know. And you walked out and you had this arm full of gear. And you went in, you put it on your bunk. And you thought, what the hell am I going to do with all that? I'd never had so many clothes in all my life. Even a pair of overalls, they always had to buy them before, you know. He took you to the dentist to give you a haircut, and you had to pay for it. And it was a haircut you wouldn't believe, you know. Took you to the dentist, the doctor. You name it, you've seen everybody. At the end of that week, there was... There were some fellas who changed their mind. Most of the fellas were conscripts, but there was about six or seven of us, probably more, I'm not sure, who were volunteers. So what they done with you? on the Friday, you had all these injections, you were feeling sick and sorry for yourself. You know, I mean this, true. I mean, we're only kids. And he said, those who have decided not to sign up, this was the volunteers. You know, the conscripts, them days had no chance at all. And he took us down to the office and he said, those who have decided not to sign them, please don't sign them. Stand over there. His name was Roberts. He was a pig with ears, this fella. Well, he'd been awful nice up to this stage, I must admit. He said, you lads are not signing, stand over there. You lads signing up, in there, and you sign them. It's a policy. If you say a sailor gets the King's Shilling, you don't. I think before we went, we got a postal order for 4 shillings. That was for expenses, cups of tea, whatever. After we came out, he fell us in with these 5 lads. And they all came from the same place. The place was a place called Hinckley in Leicestershire. Now, I've never been there. I've never even been there. Near there. And he said, and he marched them up to the gate. And he made them shake hands with every one of us. And he said, wherever you go in life, he said, you'll always remember these lads were shipmates. If only for a brief period. Right, lads, get in that wagon. And there was 2 army sergeants lifting these lads into the wagon. And I've often wondered what happened to them. But he shanghaied into the army. Because them days, they could do these things. whether they were, I've never ever found out, and I'd love to know. So if you find out, let me know. I don't even know their names. Probably didn't know them long enough to find out their names.
Now, what were your accommodation like on the rally? Was it, what were you in?
You were in a hut, which had a black enamel stove in the middle. And I hated to have been there in the winter. But if you remember, it was April when I went there, and it wasn't too bad. And I left there in the June, so it was, you know, pretty reasonable. The place itself is probably one of the most beautiful spots in this in the British Isles. It's right on the banks of the Tamar. But the instructors...
Hang on, tell us a bit more about the hut. What about the beds and
the... it was bunks. It was two, one on one, you know. All iron-shaped bunks with a lock at each. You had one this side, you had one that side.
And about how many in the hut?
About 40, I think.
Quite crowded, then.
Not really. There was plenty of space between each bunk. But there was about 40 of us, as far as I can remember.
Now, if we look at the training through a typical day, that lets us look at a lot of things. I'll come back to the instructors at the end. Now, how would your day... I know there's no such thing as a typical day, but how would your day start, usually?
With the G. The G sounded, and everybody stopped.
That would be a bugle?
It's a bugle. You sound the G every morning. And they lower the standard, you know, the flag. Then you'd fall in. Oh, that was after breakfast, you know. Then you go down, so...
Well, hang on, what about breakfast? What was the food like generally?
Pretty reasonable. I hear stories about cockroaches and fried eggs, but I've never actually seen it myself, so I'm not going to say it, you know.
Tell us how you saw it. What did you think of the food?
I fed well. Not as good as me mother did, but reasonably well.
What sort of stuff would you get for breakfast there?
Oh, the lot. Bacon, egg, fried bread, things like that.
And what about lunch? We'll just move on to the rest of the food. What about would you get for lunch and tea, or whatever you called it?
You always got soup. Being honest with you, in most Navy establishments, I found soup was more palatable than the flaming meals. But then again, having said that, you know, being an 18-year-old, you would eat anything they put in front of you. Literally anything. Even if you put your mother on there and unwrapped her, you'd still have a go at it, you know. But the meals were good. And then it went...
So after breakfast, what would you do then?
Oh, you'd be on that parade ground. They'd give you rifles. Make you throw them about. Marching. Doubling. You name it, they'd done it.
How did you take to drill?
Quite well, quite actually. I've always been a person who liked the freedom of movement. You know what I mean? If you were been in a classroom as a kid, the next 4, 5, 6, 7 years, you're then free to move around. You know, the likes of rifle drill, foot drill. I always thought it was brilliant.
Did you know why you had to do so much of it then?
No, I didn't. I appreciated it afterwards because it's a form of discipline, teaching you when and how and what. Actually, the idea of the Navy was for you to jump as they spoke, but not to think about it. Is that true?